And welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we're talking about Windows 7.
Yeah, we got some functional UI testing.
That's right, and a little bit of multi-touch as well.
Yeah, and maybe a Niner becomes a full-time Microsoft employee.
That's right, but first, our top story, Windows 7 RC is now available to the masses.
Anybody can now download Windows 7 RC.
Right, so last week it was MSDN subscribers and TechNet subscribers only, mm-hmm. But now, Mom, you can actually go out and download Windows 7. I know she's going to jump right on that. So
Now, the thing to remember here is the RC license lasts for a year.
Right, June 15th, I think, is...
You don't have to rush now. They're not going to run out of keys like before in the beta, so there is no, say, like immediate rush for people where, you know, the RC won't be available at some point.
Right.
So, other related news is Yohai has published, I think it's 5 videos so far on Windows 7 RC.
Okay.
So, big topics are multi-touch and the Windows 7 taskbar.
Okay.
He goes through...
Specifically for developers.
Yeah, now the multi-touch overview actually talks at a high level...
About the capabilities, then.
Yeah, okay. and the taskbar video, he does a comparison of, here's how the taskbar worked in beta. Mm-hmm. Based on customer feedback, these are the changes we made in the release candidate.
Okay.
So those are two, I'd say, that aren't necessarily for developers. But I think developers would definitely want to see those. Then he has a two-part series on building multi-touch applications, mm-hmm. which he goes through sort of the good, better, best approach. How to reuse and actually use multi-touch in applications that aren't even built for multi-touch. And some of the advanced things for Windows 7 taskbar. And he's got a bunch more videos for Windows 7 coming. So,
gotcha.
Got a lot of good stuff for Windows 7. So, great stuff, Yohai.
Nice. Good work. And so, Tim Sneath, also one of the Microsoft Windows evangelists, he published a developer's guide for everything you need to know about Windows 7 as a developer. So when it comes to compatibility, what do you need to know? I've got this app. It's certified to run on XP and Vista. What do I need to do to take it to Windows 7? How do I get the compatibility testing toolkits and all the things that are made available there? How do I build my app to optimize it for some of the new jump lists and all the other capabilities?
Right, exactly. How to have your app light up on Windows 7.
Right.
And the other big news is Tim links to two things that are new downloads, which is the Windows SDK, mm-hmm. and I believe it's like the Task API pack for Windows 7. The API pack is for .NET developers specifically. The Windows SDK is primarily for C++ developers.
Okay.
And the Windows SDK has been shown to work with Visual Studio Express. You can use C++ Express.
Okay.
And includes all the header libraries, tons of documentation, everything that you're going to need to know to build native Windows 7 apps.
Great, great. So I love Tim's posts because they're all kind of like just the definitive. They become the definitive post for like everything you need to know about a particular topic. So nice job, Tim. And then the New York Times. So Michael Schroeder, one of our evangelists, works with the New York Times. And you know, they've done a lot of really cool, innovative sample applications with us in the past, like the New York Times Reader. And recently, they exposed a lot of their information via REST services. And so because Silverlight can support REST, what they did is they came out with a set of wrapper libraries that make it easier for you to consume these REST services within your Silverlight application. So as an example, they've got, you know, as you would expect, article searches, bestseller, New York Times bestsellers, community, Congress, movie reviews. I don't see crossword on there. But,
real estate.
Yeah, exactly.
A geolocation, so yeah.
Yep, so a great way to get out there, data.
Yeah, yeah, there's cool things to, you know, visualize data that exists in the New York Times, so this is cool.
Yep. Engineering design, so this is Bill Buxton writing an open letter, right?
Yeah, so this was kind of cool to see Bill, who keynoted at Mix09. Mm-hmm. He is talking about, and this is in Business Week, so pretty mainstream publication, talking about the need for engineering and design to work together. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we as engineers will like go up to designer and be like, all right, so how do I design a UI? And it's like asking, it's the same thing as if a designer came up to us and said, okay, so how do I write a scalable, you know,
yeah,
three-tier application?
Well, there's a starter kit for that, so you just file new.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
There needs to be a starter kit for design, clearly. He talks about sort of the need for both sides to understand design, to get more technical, understand the technical, and engineering to understand the design constraints and some of the more common things for design, and kind of just getting along and appreciating
the benefits.
Cats and
dogs living together.
Yeah,
nice.
Crazy.
Nice.
Crazy. So always a good post, and I love reading his stuff. So.
Nice. Very cool. I can appreciate that as a Visual Studio Team system evangelist, because in 2010, one of the big things that we're trying to do is help testers and developers work better together. Mm-hmm. So that's another kind of cats and dogs relationship now. So also... You know, kind of has the same parallels. So speaking of helping designers collaborate, there's a new expression. What is it called? The expression gallery is available, and we were just talking about this before the show. It's kind of like a codeplex, but for designers to share various design artifacts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, you build some Illustrator art, you build some. Images, some WPF themes.
Some lolcats.
Some CSS templates,
yep,
for your lolcats page.
Yep.
All those different assets that you want to reuse and actually build a community of people sharing is kind of the end goal for Expression Gallery.
Gotcha. So you can upload stuff as well. It's not just coming from Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. Now, we have done that. And I think one of the challenges is there is some crossover where you see Codeplex projects for... WPF themes and templates that exist today, how
sure.
those are going to blend with Expression Gallery, and does Expression Gallery have all the same features? And yeah, it's kind of its own thing. But
gotcha. Cool.
Sure, people will figure it out.
Speaking of, no, there's no tie-in here. So Star Wars Scroller in Silverlight 3.
Speaking of
this is just totally gratuitous.
Yeah.
So this is a Silverlight sample that talks about how to just throw up a Star Wars Scroller on your site.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, using the new 3D features in mm-hmm. Silverlight, where you can actually take a plane of text and actually project it out and do the stuff. We got to do this for, like, you know, some gratuitous Channel 9 entry when, you know, the next Star Wars film that comes
yeah,
out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wait, there's another Star Wars film
I'm
coming
sure
out.
There will be. They did the cartoon one past
That's
the
true.
Six one. So.
Yeah, interesting. So WPF Future. So speaking of Codeplex projects, this is another project that the WPF team put out that has various samples that may eventually make it into Visual Studio, the WPF toolkit. But they're available for you to play with now and give feedback on. So
yeah. So this includes everything from, you know, shader effects to some project templates.
Mm-hmm.
Like you want to be able to have a splash screen where it shows your logo, for example, and it fades away, or you're using design patterns and you want to use a model view model
mm-hmm.
template. That template exists in there. Things to configure the client profile when you want your app to install with just the client profile versus
yep.
the full framework. Designers there. So lots of good stuff for building WPF applications.
And system.wpf.starwarsscroller, I think.
No, that's next version.
Oh, next version.
That's way in
oh,
the future.
Did we just disclose something there? actually, no, it's not way in the future. It's long ago.
Oh, that's
yeah.
right. Damn.
So here's an article by Ayinde Rahian that is talking about, and sorry, he's the project coordinator for RhinoMox, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's basically going on a nice little rant here talking about how util and common libraries are really kind of a bad practice. Now, why is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's they become the dumping ground of, hey, I need one method, so, and it's kind of shared across... you know, these things. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to put this in this. It becomes the bucket, right?
Yeah.
Like the slop of code.
It's like that drawer that you have in your kitchen that you throw batteries and manuals and like whatever else into. So
totally. Gotcha. So what was interesting about this discussion is it happened recently, but there's an entire discussion inside Microsoft on an internal DL on, you know, util and common libraries mm-hmm. and how to design and what's the right way to do them. I myself have done things where I have a utility namespace. Then I'll have specific classes that are now those classes should be like named after a specific thing. But
mm-hmm.
Other examples where people can sort of that we're suggesting in the DL would be to avoid this would be to use extension methods.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had, you know, regular text and we wanted to change it to Klingon text, then we could say do an overload of toString. For example, and take a, you know, a string array or something like that, and actually convert it to Klingon.
Nice, very topical. Have you seen Star Trek yet?
Something, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of ways to do this, but it is kind of interesting that people, everybody kind of does this.
So is he saying
everybody
never,
has the junk drawer?
Never use util/common or
think about ways to avoid it because you end up either taking it or it becomes the bit bucket, and then like go back and rather than having 100. Shared methods that no one's really using or that could be better refactored into, well, I'm doing all these operations on text files, so let me build a class which is, text file.
At least then it becomes text.util or something like that, so it's a little bit scoped.
Right, okay. Right, yeah.
Okay.
So
gotcha. So here's an article from the friend of the show, Brian Peake. So he contributes a lot of articles to Coding for Fun and the Wiimote Control Library and all that jazz. And so Windows 7 supports this basically a built-in Windows Virtual PC, which is the new name. Wait, hold on. I'm screwing this up. So Virtual Windows X.
Virtual PC was renamed to Microsoft Windows Virtual PC.
Thank you. And so if you want to install this, then you have to uninstall Virtual PC if you already have Virtual PC installed. And by doing so, you actually lose the capability to use the Microsoft Device Emulator, which is if you build like a .NET Compact Framework application.
Mobile app,
exactly. And you pop that up within Visual Studio. You won't be able to do that with this new version unless you install, go through the steps that Brian's outlined here.
Yeah. So what it does, I think it reinstalls and it does the step-by-step, so it has the things within the network area which actually make it work. But it's good to know if you're realizing, hey, I can't actually debug or emulate devices, this is why.
Yep, exactly. And so hopefully that's something that'll be fixed in RTM. So Visual Studio Gestures. So we talked a little bit about multi-touch applications, but how would you multi-touch enable Visual Studio? And so this is just an article that Greg Duncan linked out to.
Yeah, so this is a Visual Studio project called VS Gestures that does tablet interactions where you do gestures. But the real question is, as you were saying, multi-touch. How would I multi-touch enable Visual Studio?
Right.
So I could certainly think of examples like I'm in Class Designer, huge Class Designer. I want to be able to zoom in, zoom out with, say, finger gestures like we're walking through, or do, some sort of cut and then it zooms that thing to sort of the max width or height.
Or I was thinking if you're in one of the designers and you wanted to quickly lay out a form, one of the things you could do is have your left finger point to the item that you wanted to drop onto the form, but instead of actually having to drag and drop it every time, you just hold your finger here over button and you say boom, 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 and it creates buttons, and then you put it over text box, boom, 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 text boxes. So lots of really interesting things that you could do there.
Yeah, or if you have a method overload, you do like this and it's like running through the different overloads, like save with file, save without file names.
Yep, or copy, cut,
dude, see?
Cut it out.
See, this is going to be so much fun to multi-touch enable Visual Studio.
Exactly. This
is something you're really passionate about.
Yeah, this is the article you picked. Just to be clear here. So improving performance in reading image size.
Okay, so
for all of you out there that are working on this problem, both of you.
Yeah. So you're looking, you're reading images in, and one of the challenges is when you're reading images in, there's an image class. But it reads an entire image into memory.
If you use the GDI library.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So the goal is, and that can take a lot of seconds to load images, especially depending on the image size, et cetera, or when you're doing hundreds of images.
Right.
So one of the things you can actually do is, rather than reading the entire image, is use C# code and do a binary read directly into, look for a specific hex value and then read integers off that to get the height and width without actually opening up and creating an image class.
So it has to be C# code is what you're saying.
Actually there's unsafe code in Visual Basic, so it could be.
Yeah, you can do Visual Basic or J#.
Or I think it was U-short was the big thing, is whether the U-short data type was supported.
Gotcha. So the idea is you just take a look at the JPEG spec or the GIF spec or whatever.
Does J# support unsigned integers?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yep. So anyway, crack open the file, read the bytes you need, grab the header information out of there.
Yeah.
As opposed to reading the entire
file. Much faster.
Yeah. Silverlight gets an Emmy. So Silverlight had their NBC Olympics that was presented last year. Was it last year? Everything's kind of blurring together. Yeah. And so they recently won an Emmy for Outstanding New Approaches for Sports Event Coverage.
Yes.
So congratulations to Silverlight. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's really cool, and it sort of shows the future of what you can do with online events. And I think the big thing is they're going to be doing the Winter Olympics as well.
Yes. And they're not just streaming those live. They're available today. You can watch those now. Yeah.
Streaming in the future?
Yes.
All right. And the
Christian
cool
Lindsberger.
Yes.
Yeah, little guru. Congratulations. He's now a blue badge coming to Microsoft. What's he working on?
Same thing he had interned for. He's going to be working for the Sync framework, but as an FDE.
Okay. So drinking soda all day.
Yeah, basically.
Hanging out on the show.
Yeah, coming out to the show. Hey, guys.
Yeah,
how's
exactly.
it going?
Congratulations. So now it's time for Picks of the Week.
Picks of the Week.
So my Pick of the Week, it's kind of a gratuitous plug for my 10-4 episode this week, but it's something that I'm passionate about, and that is some of the new testing capabilities coming in Visual Studio Team System 2010. And this is one of my favorites. This is coded UI testing, or actually coded UI test is the name of the test within Team System that allows you to do what's called functional UI testing. So the idea is that I want to record a path through my application and make that an automated test so that every time I run my build or every night when I run my build, it automatically clicks through my application, and then you can add validation logic as well that says, after I go through this particular user scenario, does this value still look the same, or does this text box still appear in the right location on the form, or any number of properties. So here, it's about a 15-minute video. I take you through a quick example showing how it's going to work in Beta 1.
So this is really cool, and the goal being, like, I want to simulate, you know, somebody adding a user ID and a password and have it say fail, and, you know, red text should appear, and this label should now become visible, which says, you know, these values are incorrect, or,
exactly.
You know, email can't be valid. Now, is this just for Windows apps, or can this work with ASP.NET apps as well?
It can work. Actually, it doesn't even have to be ASP.NET. It's just web applications. And so we're going to...
So HTML, you could do PHP.
You could do PHP. You could do JSP.
Oh.
You could do static HTML.
Well, not JSP. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy talk. but yeah, you could support all of those. We will support Windows Forms,
COBOL.
WPF. The COBOL.NET stuff, sure, if you're generating Windows Forms or WPF. Basically, the idea is that we have to be, the language doesn't really matter, but we have to be able to...
I'm going
to
find
low
one
code,
you can't do.
No, we can't do low code, sorry. Yes, we can do low code. But the idea is that as long as we can get at the accessibility hooks for the application, then we can not only drive the UI, but we can also validate the UI as well. And there's a number of fallback mechanisms as well. So, like, for example, when you launch the application, I show this in the video, it doesn't only record the absolute path to the application, but, like, if it's under your Visual Studio Projects directory, then it has a fallback of a relative path within the Visual Studio Projects folder, so that if you move that folder, then your automated tests don't break, basically. Mm. So it's actually technology that's been developed and used internally at Microsoft for about 8 or 9 years. So this,
do you
even
know what
though,
the name of the tool was?
There's I think it's called RDP, which is an overloaded term. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it stands for. But
we had Maui and a bunch of others.
Yeah, it's actually now been rolled in as part of Maui.
Okay.
But basically, it's pretty mature technology. So even though this is a V1 for Team System, the product, it's stuff that we've been using internally for years and years.
Now, one last question: do I need Visual Studio installed on
the
test machines?
To run the test? No,
yes.
You don't. No, you don't. So what you need is you need some test runners, basically the ability to run the test, and also there's something known as a data collector that you can install as an agent, and then that feeds back into a TCM controller, which then collects all the information about those tests. So you can read a lot more about it in Beta 1 when that ships here.
Let me give you my scenario.
Yeah.
I can't show up for work for a week.
You want to drive Outlook?
I want to drive Outlook.
Nice.
Have random, you know, sentences, do some structure, you know, text analysis.
Data
bind it. Automatically send emails where it's sending, you know, the top YouTube clip to friends.
Yep.
So people see that I'm on email.
Yeah.
You know, maybe browsing the web so it looks like random behavior.
That's going to be a starter kit, actually.
Perfect. So,
awesome.
Okay, awesome.
So what's your pick of the week? Speaking of goofing off and playing games and not showing up to work.
Well, this is why I'm not going to be able to show up for work. That's right, gambling losses.
Nice.
So this is Dan Waters, wrote a Coding for Fun article. Thank you, Dan, for a multiplayer Texas Hold'em. Now, this is for your Zune, and he walks through how to actually build multiplayer Texas Hold'em.
For your Zune. Brown Zune. Supporting the Brown Zune. And actually...
V1, baby.
We were talking before the show, there actually already is a Texas Hold'em game that you can download and install as part of just installing the XNA framework and everything onto your Zune. But we checked, and the source code doesn't seem to be available for that. So if you want to see how it's done, then you can check out Dan's source code here.
Yeah, there's a lot of like different poker rules. And Dan wrote an entire game on how to build XNA, or entire book on how to write XNA games.
Right.
But examples here is like in sprites, rather than loading 52 sprites for each card, what he does is has one sprite and then actually does clipping. So you know how wide the card is, you know the order of the cards, all the cards are in sequential order, and we can actually clip that one sprite.
Yeah.
So a number of things where, maybe if this is your first card game, this is like a great place to start.
Right, exactly. Nice.
So, cool.
So that's it. Next week, I'll actually be at Tech Ed. Down in Los Angeles.
With Greg Duncan,
Greg Duncan and Jeff Hadfield. So we're going to have a great show, and we'll be coming to you live-ish from Tech Ed Los Angeles, and then we'll be back here in 2 weeks.
Cool. Thanks.
See you next week.